Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanerol, and I'm joined by Jacqueline Oliveira Sella, creator of Health and Work on LinkedIn. Today, we're going to be discussing innovating health and well-being solutions, bridging employee needs and growth. In this episode, we'll explore Jacqueline's expertise in designing global organizations' health and well-being solutions. This episode will delve into her journey as a healthcare strategist, her passion for improving employee health and corporate sustainability, and her vision for the future of workplace well-being. Jacqueline is a dynamic leader with over 15 years of experience in health, employee benefits, retirement, insurance, and well-being. Her career spans advisory roles at top organizations, including IBM, Aon, Colgate, and WTW, where she's led innovative initiatives to enhance health and wealth for employees globally. As a strategist, Jacqueline combines an actuarial background with her expertise in design thinking, business development, and global people management. Her work has positively impacted Fortune 50 companies, creating actionable, evidence-based healthcare solutions that align with corporate goals and employee needs. In addition to her achievements, Jacqueline is the founder of Health at Work and People, initiative aimed at driving meaningful change in employee health and corporate growth. Today, we'll discuss Jacqueline's approach to bridging health and well-being with corporate growth. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you. Very interesting what you're doing. So keep doing. Really brilliant.
Amazing.
Just pleased to be here and helping as much as I can.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. We're so excited to hear your insights today. So before we begin, you know, diving into the main questions, what we're going to do is we normally kick things off with some questions from the Proust questionnaire. So Marcel Proust, the French essayist and novelist, believed that thoughtful questions could reveal a person's true character. So you're human, let's center around you. So to begin, which talent would you most like to have?
What a interesting question. Love it. I would say that, well, it's the realm of possibilities, what's impossible today. But I would say I would love to be able to teleport like this from the cold New York into the beaches in Rio right now.
I love that.
More serious, like my superpower, if I could find a way to cut the BS, right, and be able to connect with people in a meaningful way, if as we build our relationship, we could just get the human side of each other. That I think it would be a beautiful skill and talent that all of us could have. And that would change so many things that are going funny right now.
Yeah, I think it would make for a more peaceful world, right? Like being able to understand each other better.
Yeah, well connected. To not just put yourself on other shoes, something that's really hard, but be curious and emotionally connected with one another and really care, right? I think but the superpower would be to, can I cut through all the facades and then really see the person for what the person is, right?
Yeah, that's also very beautiful. Now, I'm going to continue in the same vein with another Proust question. What would you want to be if you were to die and come back as a person or thing?
Okay. Water is my element. So I would say that my element of finding calm, right? And rethinking certain aspects of my professional and personal life. So I would say I would come back as an ocean wave. That's it. To just be on my favorite place, being able to change, be adaptable as it's needed, and be one with everything that happens around us, right? So it's like on a more philosophical way. So I would be an ocean wave.
I love that. I have not heard that yet. So that's pretty fantastic. All right. So let's get into your, you know, a little bit of your career, right? You've worked with Fortune 50 companies to create innovative health, wealth, and well-being solutions. How do you ensure these solutions balance employee needs with corporate goals?
From my experience, both as someone who loves numbers, right, or as a caregiver who needs benefits, who needs protection, right, mm-hmm. to support my own family, I've learned that success comes from genuine alignment, an alignment of two parties, right, the corporate, the business side, and the employee side. So, for example, on a corporate side, we establish like goals for things like productivity, cost maintenance, talent attraction, retention, skilling. On the employee side, right, on the individual side, we think through solutions that I would say not solutions. Let me pause and redo that. As an individual, you are focused on what's immediately valuable for you and also personally relevant, whether that is offering proactive interventions that health interventions that make sense to you. For example, mental health coverage. It's not just about the coverage. Can I access that? Is it something that's really driving change and is being measured? Or I'm a caregiver. What is the company doing in terms of providing flexible schedules to make life more manageable? Right?
Yes.
And then other than that, when I think about the how, right? How do you ensure that the solutions balance the two? I would start with curiosity. They start with curiosity and collaboration. So, for example, a few years ago, I had this beautiful ask to the company was switching their culture, had passed it through a massive restructuring, restructuring exercise, and they wanted to be considered the best, I'm trying to remember now, but it was a best employer, right?
Okay.
For employees, something on those lines. And what I was able to create with my team at the time is, well, in order to have as one of your mission statements to be considered as a best employer, you need to understand what that means for employees. So you need to actually take the time, and we build three different voices, right? So for example, we build how we can capture the voice of the employee so we understand what truly matters for them. The second pillar was, okay, I also see what my competitors are doing. So when you think about benchmarking and other aspects, so that's the second voice, the voice of the market. Then the third pillar was to create, we need to understand all of this, capturing the voice of employees with engagement surveys, interviews, and all other different ways to really capture unmet needs. I also need this, and then understanding what the market is offering, I also need to understand what is aligned with my company strategy, values, and sustainability aspects, right? You need to make sure that whatever you implement is something that it's affordable and it's sustainable. So we did that and pretty much went over, at the time, 63 countries with the exercise. And that comes like a delegation of really figuring out what would that look like for each different country. And then we started mapping and creating priorities and then acting upon, let's say, top priorities that could fit like those three different voices.
That's a very systematic approach. I love it.
Yeah. And I can give one in the States. We were able to discover gaps, for example, in mental health access and caregiver support and actually affordability of medical plans. So we worked through those three different elements. And then as a result, we streamlined vendors. We looked into revisiting high deductible limits and then improved access to mental health resources. The enrollment, the plan enrollment increased across all ages. There was an overall like increased engagement, and things like, thanks for listening, your action shows that we really care, that the company really cares about us. So that was not just the numbers, but the sentiment was different.
That's amazing. We're going to continue on with the next question. So you're in line with, you know, we talked a little bit about how you've addressed it systematically. So we're going to get into design thinking and healthcare. Your work emphasizes design thinking and client-centric solutions. Can you share how this approach has shaped your work in creating impactful healthcare and well-being programs?
Mm.
Let's actually dive into design thinking in healthcare. Your work emphasizes design thinking and client-centric solutions. Can you share how this approach has shaped your work in creating impactful healthcare and well-being programs?
Beautiful. I'm a design thinking advocate. Thanks to one of my latest employers, I love it. So design thinking starts with, for me, right? Design thinking starts with curiosity and empathy, right? Truly stepping to someone else's shoes, your client's shoes, to understand what's going on. So generally, my process would be something like when I'm creating a new offering or revisiting a new offering, my process would be something like I start with stakeholder mapping. So trying to understand who is benefiting from this or from this initiative or who is impacted by this initiative. Then I'm moving to identifying the problem, like what's the problem that we're really trying to solve here, right? What are the challenges that individuals are facing? Then once we are able to map and identify real unmet needs, real gaps, then we're moving to prioritization. We may have like we used to map like for create inclusive benefits, you need to understand what inclusion means. What else? Like, what are the unmet needs? So you map all the different problems that companies could be solved by, in this case, by employers. And you start prioritizing, and you prioritize based on the the different pillars that I have shared, right? Individual, markets, and business. And then you're moving to the actual implementation, right? And testing, depending on the size of the complexity, costs, timing. For implementation, you test an MVP, right? You do something that let's check before investing so much on this new initiative. Let's test that it really works, right? The whole evidence-based aspect of creating a product or a health offering. I'll give you one example that comes to mind. Hopefully this will be helpful to you, is when we are at the peak of COVID, right? We are asked to form a mental health task force. And then particularly, as you remember, not just our employees, but especially caregivers were under a very meaningful stress. So after understanding what was really happening with employees, we are able to create not just the offerings like backup care options or global, making sure that EAP was offered and employee assistant programs were not just offered, but they're working as it should in every single country, looking to flexibility, pay time off, and trained managers on how to respond to the different life situations that we captured, right, by listening to employees. And then, like, the result, going into the memory lane here, was anecdotally things like, for one of our engineers, one key talent shared with something like, I'm not a caregiver, but I'm very proud to work here because I see that IBM is stepping in to support those who need it. So this was, and on top of that, when I think about numbers, there was at that particular year, there was a 4 basis point increase, if I'm not mistaken, in term on engagement survey, even in the middle of like the whole COVID situation. And it was really a testament of like the power of listening, iterating with the right stakeholders and responding with like practical and empathetic solutions.
Well, it sounds like so much of what I'm hearing, right, based on your background, is around really that listening piece and empathy. So that truly is at the heart of you being an effective leader. So thank you for sharing that. Now, if we move on, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you've worked across many geographies. So if we look at from a global health trends perspective, with your extensive experience in employee benefits, what are the most significant health and well-being trends you've observed, and how should organizations prepare for these changes?
I'll put AI aside for a minute. One major shift that I have seen over and over is the rise demand, not just a demand, but normalization of ask for mental fitness. Employees want more than the old school EAP solutions. I'm looking for, like, going back to our first question, they are looking for something that's relevant to them, something that's resonates with them, and really helps them to overcome their obstacles. loneliness and social connectivity, it's also top concern. So we had the U.S. general surgeon, former general surgeon, providing us plenty of data, right, correlating loneliness with reduced longevity and increasing chronic illness. And especially with the rise of remote and hybrid work, right? I'm not saying that's the cause. I'm just saying that's part of it. And the third would be mental fitness. The second is addressing loneliness and social connectivity. We are social animals.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the third is, now touch on AI, it's like finding a more personalized way to deliver healthcare, like to deliver health interventions for supporting employees with conditions like overwhelming stress, overwhelming anxiety, depression, chronic conditions. We are talking about cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, obesity, musculoskeletal conditions come to mind, and financial well-being. Those are continue to be on a rise, particularly in light of AI. Right? AI is like the thrill and the fear.
Very true.
You are now able to create that personalization without all the administrative burden. So you're able to create some more, it's funny, with the help of technology. Once you're able to identify the needs and the technology can help to personalize and that need, like to really uncover what's under the surface, some technologies have the power to do that, you can be more targeted, more intentional about how you are addressing top health risk concerns and ways of working, right? It's very funny to say that, but you can use technology to actually to be that instrument of making life easier when at work. So when I think the second part of your question was what organizations could do differently. Five topics come to mind. One is really looking to what investing in mental health support looks like. It's more than just a checklist of I'm offering mental health as part of my healthcare plan. It's checking on access, checking on quality, checking on effectiveness. And beyond that, understanding where the lack of mental fitness is coming from. Is there anything, and that brings us to this, the second, which is fostering this culture of social connectivity and really prioritizing health. Because if you are providing, you're providing the remedy so people can create the habits to develop their own, keep up with their own mental fitness, but you have a culture that's actually serving as a root cause, like a company that's self-centered, that's very, that's not exploring the, on a good sense, how people as a team, like how teams perform, like best perform, and creating that environment where people can feel valued, people can build, like people can feel they can relay on each other, right? Building trust.
Yes.
And that brings me either like you need to figure out what there was an excellent article that was published on Harvard, I think Harvard Business Review a few months ago, It's not about just about bringing people to have face-to-face interactions, right, in person. Yeah. It's really being intentional about community building initiatives. And when you meet face-to-face, like when you are in person in an office, that interaction should be, the way you are structuring ways of working, and that leads me to the third, it's like how you can prioritize. So one is investing comprehensive mental fitness support that looks into root cause. Two, fostering a culture of social connectivity and health. And I would say skilling in line. Third, prioritizing well-being, not as a separate entity, but as part of ways of working, as part of your job structure, as part of your reward systems. So it's the flexibility in the way the work is arranged. It's recognizing healthy behaviors, what that could look like, and making well-being perhaps a key performance, a KPI, right? A key performance indicator. That leads me to talking about KPI. Leverage the power of people analytics, like data and people analytics, and really tailor your offerings based on real employee needs. And this, I would say, this will help companies to the most pressing health risks in a meaningful and effective manner. Prevention is the number one word that I keep hearing over and over from healthcare professionals, but it's a major cultural shift for us to get there. So you do need to be very intentional about how you're addressing top health risk concerns. And the last is communicate with transparency. I would say be authentic with boundaries. But really find ways to ease. I remember one of my prior colleagues, she used to use the word, make sure that your offerings are consumable. So people can find where it is. If there are changes in management, it's properly communicated, checked, and that people make time to, when I say people, it's like leaders, managers, make time to listen.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I definitely learned some amazing tips around, you know, understanding ways to promote actionable change. So now moving forward, in terms of your leadership and well-being specifically, leaders play a critical role in championing health initiatives. What advice would you give leaders looking to foster a culture of health and sustainability in their organizations?
Well, I always start with what are your intentions, right? And being a leader is not about which position you take in the company. Everybody can be a leader. So focus on the why you are a leader in the first place and what's the intention behind it? Is it self-centered or is it something that you are really focusing on uplifting others? So I would say first, model the behavior you want to see. And I would start with self-reflection and aiming for continuous growth. If, for example, if leaders never take breaks, rarely unplug, fail to identify their own skills gaps or dismiss mental health concerns, and mirror there that, right? They will sense that this is how I'm expected to, this is part of my ways of working, right? And personally, I try to meditate every day. That's something that helps to set the day. And I use, and I will tell you more about it, I've been creating the habit of doing journaling. I use my own, after having the opportunity to go through a program called Cultivating Emotional Balance by Professor Ekman, Alan and Paul Ekman. And part of the training was you were supposed to be building your journaling on a daily basis. It was a struggle, but it's amazing. At first, it was a struggle to really, I started with writing it down. Then I wanted to test, I actually did voice to text and type, but I did create a framework that made sense to me, which is called SAFE.
And
I
agree yeah.
more.
Yeah, but we're going to get into it in the next question.
And the other portion that I would highlight in terms of leadership behavior is celebrate wins, small wins, and really encourage an open dialogue. I've seen leaders who share their own life situations in a way that they are not just sharing the burden, but in a way that's showing vulnerability and balanced with health boundaries. And that has helped to reduce, to bring the, like, we are all human beings. It's we are all part of bigger community of beings, and life happens. So we can pretty much set the tone. As I said, we are all humans. We all struggle. Let's figure it out together. Right? Well, that would be my.
I love it. It, you know, like I said, you really come across as a very caring, empathetic, active listener, right? And I'm sure that that's also led to much success in your leadership. So just, you know, you mentioned briefly SAFE. So if you can just share with us a little bit more about what the SAFE framework really entails, and why do you think it's something both individuals and employees should consider adopting?
Thanks for the question. Let me start by piggyback on our last question on leadership, right? Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress. It's something that you need to put the effort on a daily basis. The ways that I've been, that I see growth is when you pause to self-reflect. When you pause to create emotional awareness. Not about emotional control. It's about emotional awareness and you being able to act in that split second to actually bring to constructive results. So on that note, SAFE was born. So I started using my own journaling as I was sharing. I went through this very extensive program on cultivating emotional balance. And then when things are tough, when something is not so natural, I become curious. I try to understand why is this bothering me, and what else is out there that could help others to self-reflect. It's very like everybody's different. So the SAFE was a four-step, was created out of hard study, lots of interviews with with brilliant industry leaders and healthcare professionals. And it's simple four-step process for working through life challenges, if meaning everything that happens on your day. Whether that is a tough feedback from your manager or juggling multiple projects and turning that reflection into action. And so what SAFE stands for? for.
Yeah, let's get into it. Share a topic.
S, set your intentions. So before you dive into a situation, clarify what's really going on here. Why am I even self-reflection? What's my intention? Right? Okay. Are you trying to solve for a difficult conversation? Is this related to your next career move or figuring out how to restore trust with a colleague? Setting a clear intention does help you to help like me and others who have tried the method to stay focused. So S for set your intentions. A, acknowledge facts and emotions. I would say acknowledge and separate facts from emotions. It's so easy to get out on your head. I guess in general. Yeah. Very common expression. So be honest and non-judgmental with yourself and try to lay out the situation with facts. Who said what? Why it bothered you? How are you feeling physically and emotionally? For me, it could look like something like my mirror patient, I need, let's say, delegation skills or communication skills. I was defensive at first, but deep down, I know this could be a growth opportunity. So I'm separating what I was feeling from the facts. And then I'm moving to the F, right? So F for frame, reframe, and sometimes I joke, the third F could be many things. So let's call focus or hand off the cake. And that's where I see magic happening, because you start thinking through, what are the assumptions that I'm making here? Is there a different way to see this situation? What can I do differently? It's more about taking control of the narrative, right? Yes. And identifying the things that you have no control of. Like being able to label that, it's also helpful.
Yeah. So
the third, right? There are situations that it's hard, but you may need to do a hands off the cake. And I use it that expression with someone that I had a lot of respect for. And had a very difficult time to let things go. Unfortunately, to their own, it's what you're going to get out of it if you continue to push on. Is it the right time to push on? And focus on what you can do. And that takes us to the E. I'm simplifying. There is plenty of examples and guidelines, because this is based on a lot of heavy work on different types of journaling. The latest is E, what I call evaluate and evaluate next steps, action, right? And reflect on what that small step could be. Maybe it's a scheduling time with your manager to clarify, right, expectations, or setting up a practice session to brush up your presentation skills, if that's rehearse. It doesn't need to be a big step. Even small, consistent actions can really create big shifts. And then I think why this is relevant, right? Part of the question.
Yeah.
I will talk how it impacted me and what I have heard from others is that it really allows you, right? The journaling method using this simple, safe. And my spouse said, why not sane? I said, yes. I will become sane after I'm able to dissect it. Like I'm Brazilian actuary, he's an actuary FSA, so it's an interesting combination here at home. But it's basically, it's like SAFE allows you to really break down the life issues like conflict, into a more focused, actionable plan, separating, like bringing emotional awareness, right? It's so relevant. How many times you are in your head to some extent, and if you are projecting situations that have happened in the past. So by really doing some self-reflection, you can identify what is projection versus what's reality. And for example, right, when I think about organizations, it would help a great deal to mitigate some of the conflicts, the way people provide feedback, the way people, managers and others, like project managers, provide feedback, particularly when it's a tough conversation, could use a lot from like from this
framework,
right? From this framework, and it's simple. It doesn't take effort other than yourself and your courage to really start paying attention to opportunities for growth and just not just opportunities for growth, but what is reality? Sometimes it's not just on your head. Like think about there could be a real physical issue that you are missing out, like a medical issue that you are missing out, ignoring what's going on.
Because I guess everyone gets so busy, right, with life that you don't have time to kind of pause and have this reflection. So this is fantastic, Jacqueline. I think that the framework is really helping with, you know, mental health, I think, in many ways, because instead of getting flustered, right, you now have a calm way of evaluation through this very, like, step-by-step process of helping yourself kind of get to the answers. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Okay.
So we're going to conclude the podcast with one last question, right? You know, if you were to think back to your younger self, now with some years of experience, if you were to look back on your younger self, what advice would you give young Jacqueline?
Oh, I love that. And I should have made that disclosure up front, but I will make it now. Everything that I have shared today, it's my own thoughts, my own opinion. It does not represent my new employer. Very exciting. This is my first week.
Oh.
On a company that I'm thrilled to be with. More to follow on that. But if I'm to talk with, so disclaimer made, if I'm to talk with my younger self, I would pause, which is hard, but do make time to listen to that inner voice that's really telling you that even when things like, when things go against what you think you should do, even when your guts are telling you to go against, for a variety of reasons, what you should be doing, that thought, that lingering thought is there for a reason. So really pausing to maybe it could be guiding you to life opportunities that feel right for you, for who you are, right? I have pivoted my career out of necessity and out of choice in two separate crucial points in my career. And the pause made such a difference. The other one is the second, so I have three Progress over perfection.
Ah.
Set your high standards, put your vision board, whatever you use,
yeah.
But don't let the fear of trying to be perfect get you stuck. Take calculated risks. Celebrate your small wins. Find your allies. Find your, I don't like the word tribe, but I will use, find the people that can help you other than yourself to bring some helping hands to who you want to be, and just learn as you go. And the third, very aligned with that, stay curious and compassionate.
You're very curious and you're very compassionate. It comes across in spades. Thank you, Jacqueline. It's so nice getting to know you, and I'm sure everyone is going to really value the insights you've shared today.
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's part of my mission. The Health at Work and People studies are published on LinkedIn, and they are created for you. So take advantage of it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.